Welcome to episode 225 of The Numbers Game. I'm Jace. I'm here with Nick and Marty. And Marty, I've got a question for you straight off the bat, mate. And I don't mean to target you, but do you have a will?
So what, just because I'm like 93 years old, you just throw to me right up front?
I just
mate, the way you're losing weight, let me just say this. I think you should get yourself in order.
Out of everyone in this room, there's one closer to death, maybe, statistically. So just had to throw it out there.
I don't, but it's something I'll have to I've been dealing with my parents' stuff over the last probably 5 years, but now that they're all getting older and mum's died off, I'll be next in line, I guess. Goodness me, that's terrible to think, but no, I haven't at the moment.
No, thank you for answering and your honesty too, mate, and it's one that's popped up. I've had some really interesting conversations thrown my way and some people share some stories, but before I go into a few stories, Nick, on your side, a will, estate planning, you guys got it all sorted?
Yeah, no, I do have a will, yep.
Updated since the birth of your baby daughter?
No, it's not, but that's okay. It won't really make a massive difference, to be honest, because they can cover a lot of that off anyway. But yeah, like, I'm surprised you don't have one, Marty. And it's a pretty common response that people don't think they need one until they get a bit older.
Yeah, and I think my thought process was everything just goes to coal, but that's not necessarily the case, right? Is that
it's
right?
Not the case. Yeah, well, yeah. It's definitely not the case. People can challenge it. Look, there's. If you have a wife and a child, there's more chance it'll get to where it needs to go. But for the sake of, you know, anywhere from $500 to $1,000, to have a complete, well, nearly complete certainty, wills are an absolute necessity.
Yeah. So, you know, when this idea was floated, I bumped into another lady in the accounting industry, Heather Smith. Anyone in the accounting industry knows who Heather is. I think she was the original author of the, the book for dummies, the yellow books. It was the book for dummies, the zero edition, like how to use zero. So anyway, Heather's been around the industry and she saw me up in Brisbane. I was the MC at the Zero Summer Series and she shared a story, you know, it was a bit of just really shitty experiences where her and her brother, they had an auntie that, you know, was going to be passing away and the inheritance would have flowed to this lady, Heather, and her brother. And what it seems like, and Heather, apologies if I completely cooked this story, I'm just going a real high level version of it, but basically I think her brother got involved and got the will changed while auntie was on the deathbed. And basically the entire inheritance went to the brother instead of a couple of other family members as per the original will. So now there's this whole family kind of cluster, for lack of a better word, trying to kind of argue over what was meant to happen with Auntie Mavis's inheritance. So then it kind of flowed into this, well, hang on, this could actually be a great conversation for the Numbers Game podcast because Heather's, you know, a listener and recommended, just saying it'd be great to spread the message to more people to understand that a will doesn't have to be complicated, doesn't have to be expensive, but it's something that you should get it sorted and know that it's on the shelf on standby if it's ever needed. And, you know, touch wood, you hope that it's not needed. And Marty, I was only joking, I hope that yours isn't needed for at least another 40 years plus or minus a few. But, you know, so it led to the question of, you know, what happens if you pass? If you don't have a will, you know, what do your family get everything? Do they not? You know, and sometimes it's more complicated than we actually think. And then there's things like the state trustees, you know, do you want the state trustees to be in control of your estate versus something that you've mapped out yourself? So especially when it comes to legacy, your loved ones, married, not married, kids, no kids, and then goes even further complicated again. Let's say, Nick, something happens to you and Alicia, what happens to your daughter? Who gets to look after your daughter? Or, you know, is there something in mind that you'd specifically map out, or that's not something that you've thought about yet?
No. Well, yeah, we've thought about it because you kind of get forced to with the will.
Oh, so you've had the – okay, is this part of your will already?
Yeah. Well, it's part of most wills, to be honest. I would suggest it's part of any will. So, and it's one of the key reasons wills don't get done, or like a lot of people, including ourselves, they get started and then they sit on the fridge for a year or two because – people think, a will, I've just got to work out where my money goes. If I pass away, that's easy. But then you get all these other questions around, well, if you've got dependents, who looks after them? And then who's the second in line? And people go, oh, shit, that's too hard. And they just park it. That happens a lot because of those questions outside of, well, that don't have a monetary value, I guess.
I'm interested in regards to your story before, Jace, because I had a situation where my grandmother, and I didn't know this, had left me $50,000 in a will that I didn't expect, you know, because it was and my mother found it in her bedside drawer and ripped it up and went back to the old will where she got everything, right? And that was – now, that's okay because I wouldn't have taken it anyway, right? It was going to be what it was. But it's but I just think what holds precedent, because technically both I don't think were registered. And this is probably a factor that, you know, save any confusion, that I gather there has to be some sort of registration process or –
You can, but that also doesn't have to be. So this is where wills can be quite an interesting one. I'll take you through some of the dot points of it. But the one more little background story, which is another one that just in the last week was passed to me, and not even in relation to this, but another friend, her father suddenly died, and it was unexpected, died very young. And he had an estimated net wealth of around $3 million in property, cash, super, all these different bits and pieces. Now, he had a new spouse on the scene, and that spouse had kids as well, and they weren't married, but they were living together, so technically de facto. Now, when this spouse, when her dad passed away, she had two brothers as well, and what had been talked about all along with her dad was that the money would, that one of their brothers has disabilities, so dad wanted the money to support the one of the sons who had disabilities, and that would help him get through his life. But at the time, because there was no will, they couldn't find the will. The whole family thought there was one, but they decided, no, well, we will appoint his existing spouse as the executor of the estate, and she will help make sure that the family gets what was meant to happen. So the family thought. Now, if you put trust in somebody and they end up with the power, the executor, which I'll run through who has the power in a will and what happens there. But the family decided, rather than letting the South Australia state trustees get involved, they'd keep it in the family. Everyone was getting along really well. And then what ended up happening, though, was the default in South Australia was that 50% of the estate goes to the spouse, straight up. Then the remaining 50% gets split evenly amongst the living children. Now, things continued to get more complicated, and this ended up tied up. There was meant to be a two-year limit on this, but ended up being 8 years of legal fees by the time everything was sold and wound down and the money came out. What was meant to be a $3 million estate, the siblings got $40,000 each. So this is just an example of, if there isn't a will and you let it all go to chance, $3 million can become $40,000 for a couple of kids who we're now being looked after their disabled brother for the rest of their life. And meanwhile, new spouse who was on the scene with a couple of kids who hated new dad are now going to end up inheriting quite a healthy portfolio at some point down the track. So that's another devastating story of what can go wrong, which is why we share these stories on the Numbers Game to help our audience and our listeners, and then hopefully they can spread the word and share with others. So a couple of the steps on how to make a will, you actually don't even have to pay. You can do the free will yourself. There is ways to do it. While I don't recommend that, I think using a lawyer, there's reasons that experts out there exist in wills and estate planning. But it can range from $300 to $3,000, give or take. It can be a little bit higher if you're going for something super bespoke and super complicated. I think the word testamentary trust rings a bell, where you can do some pretty fancy things with your money after you pass if you do have a substantial amount you want to kind of divvy up. But yeah, depending on what state you live in, you can look up a state trustee website for free online templates. As I said, there's do-it-yourself will kits. If you go into the post office or stationery stores, it'll jump out at you now because you've listened to this episode. And you can go through that. Otherwise, as I said, recommend engaging a lawyer to go through this and have a look. The parts of a will that you'll need to get your head around, and somebody who might explain it to you if you do it properly, there's the executor. And that person is responsible for administering your estate. So whatever you want to happen after you pass, the executor is the person who takes over and starts to make that happen. Beneficiaries are the people that you determine will inherit your assets. And then if you do have children, you name legal guardians who you want to become the carers for minor children. And then also what usually happens is you have a backup executor or a backup guardian in case something happens to that person over the period of time that your will has existed. Following so far, and that pretty much was the process you went through, Nick?
Yep, definitely. Yep.
Cool. And then apart from that, you know, the next parts of the steps are pretty straightforward. It's identifying real estate, bank accounts, super, life insurances, businesses if you've got it, personal belongings, debts, liabilities, and you just kind of map it all out. And probably something that I guess, Nick, you know, talking to you before we go into the before I finish actually and pass to you, there's also specifics. You know, you can go down to how you want specific things divided up. On the weekend, we were talking about a property that we're on was going to go to one particular child potentially, but now over the years, it's maybe that child isn't that interested in this property. So why did we specifically leave that property to one child and then cash to another child? So, you know, sometimes it can be overcomplicated at the time and things change.
Jace, what about capital gains? Like, is that transferred? Like, if someone has a stock portfolio and that's transferred, does that person then become liable for the capital gains in the transfer?
Yep, there's a few different ways to do it. If it ends up in the estate, so you've got like a estate after you pass, and that the estate can then handle the taxes in certain circumstances. Otherwise, if the cost base is going to pass over and then that person will end up paying capital gains tax, depending on the transfer of the cost base, when the shares were purchased, it can get quite complicated. So even having an accountant involved after, and accountants often sometimes hold on to a will for clients or become the involved as a party who, you know, works with a lawyer and accountants. We are, after all, the trusted advisor. But yeah, that's definitely something to take into consideration too. We've had clients whose parents have passed away and left investment properties or main residence. And then it depends on X amount of time. I think it's up to 2 years after their parents passed away, they had to sell the main residence without incurring capital gains tax. So there's heaps, you know, and all straight away, I mean, it's complicated. Not only are you dealing with a loved one who's passed away, you're potentially then maybe needing to seek extra tax advice or, you know, making phone calls about things that you never knew you were going to be up for. So can be quite complicated. But, you know, and then ultimately to make this all legally binding, the person who makes the will, being you, you will need to sign it. You'll need it witnessed by two independent adults who are not the beneficiaries, and it'll need to be signed in each other's presence to make it all legally binding. Because ultimately what ends up happening, just like what I talked about a couple of the earlier examples, often wills are challenged and often wills are invalidated because they weren't created properly. So, you know, I share this info just to say, do it right, do it properly, review it regularly, and then store it in a secure and safe location. So unlike Marty's example where the 50 grand didn't flow to Marty because the new updated will got ripped up, you want to keep it in a secure location, you know, fireproof safe, lawyer, accountant, bank deposit box, potentially circulate a few copies of it to trusted, you know, friends and family who will just secure it away. And if you change your mind, you got to change your will. So Nick, what was the process like on your side?
Yeah, well, everything you've been through, like I explained, we did sit on it for a while because it's, you know, it's just hard things to think about.
For sure.
We went through a solicitor. I would highly recommend people do that. You know, I know you can get will kits, but you know, wills don't need to be War and Peace. So you can find a solicitor to do it at a pretty decent rate. Couple of benefits. Well, number one, you know it's right. Number two, they might challenge some things that you're thinking based on their experience. Number three, they'll have a copy of it, the account, and then they'll send it to your accountant. So I don't even know where my copy is, but I know the solicitor's got one and I know the accountant's got one. And number four, you know it's all been witnessed correctly. So you know, can't get to a point where it can be challenged. So I would definitely recommend you see an expert for sure. And I think one of the things with wills that gets missed is it's obviously the money side is very important. And, you know, when you work so hard to build a legacy, you want it to be dealt to the people you want it to be dealt to. But just the pain and suffering it can save by having one. You know, you mentioned state trustees. I had a situation, a personal situation a couple of years ago where my grandparents passed away. Just purely because of age, and you know, when they were younger, state trustees was the go-to. That was the, you know, only wealthy people had a lawyer, and my grandparents weren't well off, so I went to state trustees, and the process that we had to go through there wasn't about getting the will contested; it was about getting their house sold. It took 2 years, and to the point where we've seen real estate market conditions change in those 2 years. And we were really just trying to get an agent out there to look at the place and list it. But it just, this, the delays at state trustees was out of control. There was the house needed work, so there was flooding because there was bad weather. It was on the Central Coast. So all these things that went wrong because we just couldn't get the place listed, because state trustees really were just under-resourced and didn't have time to get to the file. So if you think you think about the pain and suffering when you lose a loved one, when you then got to go down an arduous process to contest wills or, you know, deal with someone like the state trustees, it's just not required. As in, you just don't need that. You don't want that. So a will can just make things far easier when you do lose a loved one and you're dealing with so much emotionally. The last thing you want to be worrying about is money. So, you know, every financial planning client that we sit with, if they don't have a will, we say, go and get a will, even if you don't think you need one. You need one because you've got assets, and particularly if you're a young couple like yourself, Jace, and it's not clear cut, you know, you don't have kids. So when it's not clear cut as to where that money would go, that's when there can be challenges. So I think everyone should definitely get one, and you should definitely do it through a professional to make sure it's right.
I think it was interesting then, you know, three people in this room, it's one in three, but everyone's heard a story of a will. Well, most people have heard a story of a will not going right or something going pear-shaped. So it's quite interesting that it's one of those things that from a life admin point of view, it just kind of keeps getting pushed to the side. You know, even hearing Dad redo his will and sort his will out kind of triggers like, oh, yeah, I should get that done. Sorry, Nick.
I'll give you one more example. I've had a couple recently, and this was a family one as well. But I had an auntie die of cancer, and so she had four kids, adult kids, and shocking circumstances. But post her death, one of her kids died pretty close, like maybe 6 months later. So that was my cousin. So she had a partner, a de facto partner, been together for some time. But what happened was, because my auntie died, so everything got distributed to all the kids, and then the de facto partner of the child that passed away not long after then got all of my cousin's share of her mum's estate, which is not what her mum would have wanted. So really, if she only had three kids, it would have went to the three. So, but because my cousin didn't have a will in place, the default was, well, you've been living with that person, so they get everything you've got. So the money went from my auntie down to my cousin, who passed away in pretty quick succession, and then went to her de facto partner. And it just caused this big issue because he was friends with my remaining, with the remaining kids. And then he said he would do the right thing. He's like, I don't want your mum's money. That can go to you three. But then when the money came, there was challenges. When he got that money, it was harder for him to make that decision. So it just caused probably 18 months or 2 years of pain. And it was just the last thing they needed, you know, after losing their mum to cancer at a reasonably young age and then losing their sister, you know, in she was only 32 or something. That was the last thing that they needed. So that's a really good example of just the pain and suffering that it can add to existing pain and suffering when you're going through situations like that, because it's funny how people act when money is involved. Even when they say they won't act in particular ways, when money's involved, people change. Seen it with family. I've seen it in the business with clients. So they're so important. They're so important.
Yeah, for sure. A couple of questions for you guys. And Nick, thanks for sharing that story, because that really does hit home as to just what, you know, how life circumstances can change and all of a sudden, you know, arguments over money that shouldn't have been there in the first place if it was more thought out. I'll go back to you, Nick, while you know, you're in the hot seat. But from a superannuation point of view, we've got, you know, life insurance. Now, when somebody passes away, can you talk me through a bit about, you know, the executor or someone who's in charge of the will? There's life insurance, there's a payment that's going to come for superannuation. If the will says something different to what the superannuation fund has as to who the beneficiary is of a life insurance payment or superannuation, where do we go from there?
Yeah, it's a good question. To be honest, I don't particularly know the answer straight away, but when you do have a life insurance policy or a superannuation policy, you have you can nominate a beneficiary, and that can be either binding or non-binding. So a binding nomination has to be updated every 3 years. And I believe that will override a will. If it's a non-binding nomination, so you've just nominated someone as non-binding and you haven't touched it again, updated every 3 years, then it will not, and it will revert to the will. But, you know, if Marty was to pass away and on his he had a binding nomination that was recently updated within the last 3 years, I'm 99.9% sure that trumps a will.
I think I've just looked it up as well, and you're right. The named beneficiary of the life insurance policy will override the will. So another one of those things to be aware of, that, you know, you can go and update your will, but if you don't, then dot I's and cross T's on some of the other policies and documents. Again, that's something that if you're doing it with a professional, they'll guide you through that and tell you to go and do that. So,
yeah, and that's why, just quickly on that, that's why it's important. What we see a lot of times is people with new relationships where they haven't updated their nominated party. We see that a lot of times as well. And that's why the binding needs to be updated every 3 years. Otherwise it becomes non-binding. So definitely important that if you've got a super fund and you're not sure, just ring your super fund, or on your statement, it should actually list who your nominated beneficiary is. And then from there, you want to make sure it's binding. And if it's not, get onto your super fund and sort it out.
Marty, the one I had for you was just out of curiosity for myself. You know, somebody passes away and they've got $1 million property with a $600,000 mortgage. What are the steps from there for, you know, somebody who's in charge of the will? They've got to then sort out the property. You know, do they contact the bank? Does the mortgage get frozen? Are they given a bit of time? What are the kind of things that you need to be aware of?
I suppose it depends if there's a remaining partner as well. I guess the responsibility and ownership goes to that. Separate partner, so there's still a liability on the debt. So I guess it depends on the individual circumstance, but the bank needs to be notified, and then of course the action needs to be taken. But the banks are generally pretty good with that stuff if you talk it through and you're transparent about it up front as to what's happening. And you could do, you know, you could do hardship where if there's still repayments that are owing, maybe you do interest only for 6 months, or, you know, there might be a period of time where you don't have to make a repayment until things are sorted out. But it's all, yeah, it's all just about transparency and giving in, just notifying the bank as to what's occurred. So, yes.
I've just got a question on that. It's a good question, Jace. But the reality is, if you inherit something and there is a debt attached, the debt needs to be dealt with, whether that's paying it out or you getting the debt in your own name and refinancing it because it's...
Yeah, you still have an obligation to the debt. Yeah.
I wasn't sure if there was a bit of like a lead time or a buffer where the bank goes, okay, cool, you got this much time to sort it out, while, let's say, the property sits in the estate and it's not then passed over to the new owners yet. If there is, you know, something's being contested, you know, takes a bit of time to work out where the will is or who gets involved. And as you said, you know, if the state trustees hold onto a property for 2 years and it's not, you know, sold in time, yeah, just out of curiosity.
Yeah, well, the executor would be responsible for that debt being paid out on the sale of that property. So it's like, it's just how the debt is handled in the transition, I guess. And yeah, because there's still an obligation that needs to be met. So that would be between the bank and the client.
Well, I think we could share stories and go into all different things about wills and estate planning. But at the end of the day, I think what this episode has been here to do is just to say, if you haven't got your will sorted or if you haven't reviewed it for some time, this is the strong encouragement you need to go and get that sorted. If you are looking for advice or recommendations, Nick, Marty, myself, the team at Innovate, the team at Future Advisory, we're always here to take your call and point you in the right direction. We'd love to be able to help and make sure that you're all sorted. So go and do the hard thing that you need to do. You'll feel better for it knowing that that's on the shelf. Marty, this is your call out to you. We want to know when yours is done and find out the process, how you went. And until next time.
Where there's a will, there's a way. Game over.
This podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. The conversations are of a general nature and do not qualify as financial or tax advice. We recommend before you make any financial decisions, you consult a licensed professional. Individuals on the podcast may hold positions in the companies discussed.